Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atit, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, December the 8th, 2014. The government covers hotel bills for former rebel officials.
Those who came during those talks when the government was making talks with the people of Yau Yau and others with the former militias in Khartoum, all these people were accommodated in the hotels all this time, and the bills accumulated. They could not be paid in time.
A top-ranking general dispels rumors of his supposed disappearance.
There was this rumor that came out through Sudan Tribune that I was missing for 2 days, which was not correct. So I just want to assure the public that I was not missing.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
The South Sudan government last Friday approved 18.4 million South Sudanese pounds, the equivalent of $6.3 million, to cover hotel bills of former rebel officials being reintegrated into the National Army. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Shortly after a Council of Ministers meeting in Juba chaired by Vice President James Wani-Igga, government spokesperson Michael Makwe told the reporters the government will pay the hotel bills of former rebel officials.
These are bills of people who were accommodated in the hotels, those who came during those talks when the government was making talks with the people of Yau Yau and others with the former militias in Khartoum. All these people were accommodated in the hotels all this time, and the bills accumulated. They could not be paid in time.
Makwe says the approval to cover the lodging expenses came after a request was made by the Minister of National Security. According to local media reports, this marks the second time the government has agreed to pay the bills of government officials living in hotels. Last month, according to local online radio Tamazus, the Council of Ministers approved a 13.2 million South Sudanese pounds, or roughly $4.6 million, to cover the bills of civil servants who took refuge in local hotels after receiving death threats following the outbreak of violence in Juba last December. The Minister of Finance was directed to pay their hotel bills. Those civil servants are expected to leave the hotels by December 25th. Wani Michael, a civil society activist working with the Youth Empowerment and Advocacy Forum in Juba, thinks it was a wrong decision.
Approving 18 million South Sudanese pounds to cater for hotel bill and seeing children, women dying in the hospital, no drugs, seeing people drinking unclean water, seeing things where services are supposed to be provided and not be provided, and looking at just 18 million being approved for individuals. I think it is not a good system.
Wani says the money should be spent on more important things.
We would love to see money be approved for development of this country. And something very important that also the government need to look into it, that why do we keep soldiers who are supposed to protect civilians in the hotel? Why can't they stay in the barracks? Because that is where supposed the soldiers have to stay.
Since South Sudan gained its independence in 2011, the government has integrated several rebel groups into its national army following the declaration of amnesty by President Salva Kiir in July of that year. Since that time, several disgruntled generals who defected from the national army formed an armed rebellion against the Kiir administration. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu from Juba.
A senior military officer in South Sudan government's army, the SPLA, met with the President Salva Kiir today in Juba to dispel news reports that he had gone missing. Lieutenant General James Thomas Cirillo, Deputy Chief of General Staff for Training, told reporters in Juba that despite rumors, he will not abandon the government to join the armed opposition. Philip Thorne Aleu reports for VOA from Juba.
News reports of General James Cirillo 2 days disappearing from his duties created panic over the weekend and ignited memories of the deadly violence that broke out in Juba nearly a year ago. The SPLA's second most powerful military officer confirmed to reporters that he has not joined the rebellion led by former Vice President Riek Machar. General Cirilo says that while he was not in Juba last week, there was a simple explanation.
I was on a mission, on a course in Switzerland. I finished the course and I came back home on Saturday. There was this rumor that came out through Sudan Tribune that I was missing for 2 days, which was not correct. So I just want to assure the public that I was not missing.
Cirilo says he met President Kiir early today to brief him about his mission to Switzerland, but he provided no further details about the nature of his European trip. He says he and President Kiir discussed more than the media reports about his alleged disappearance. As a veteran soldier who fought for South Sudan's independence, Cirilo says he is committed to helping the people of South Sudan find a way to live in peace.
The public and those people who are creating these kind of rumors that you are committed to this country, you fought for this country, you fought for the people of this country, and you will continue to be committed to our people so that they realize their aspirations of peace, their aspirations of freedom, the aspiration of a just society.
Cirilo urged the media to always verify their sources to avoid fueling public speculation and uncertainty with rumors. This is not the first time General Cirilo has had to address this type of media frenzy. Last July, Cirilo, who hails from Central Equatorial State, was reported to have warned elders from the three states of Greater Equatorial Region against joining the rebellion led by former Vice President Riek Machar for fear of being targeted and killed by government forces. Cirilo later denied those reports. In this latest incident, the Sudan Tribune reported that Cirilo had gone missing from his home and office for at least 2 days. The online news outlet did not name its sources in the story. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Western Bahr al-Ghazal. Officials there are focused on boosting food production. Authorities, together with the Hope Agency for Relief and Development Organization, have launched a food security production project to communities in rural areas. They say they want to help farmers learn more modern production skills that will reap bigger harvest and eventually improve their lives. VOA fellow Lucy Pony has more from Washington.
Evan Sowino is program manager for HARD in WOW. He says if farmers improve their capacity in crop production, it will reduce food exports from neighboring countries, and farmers will be able to feed their own families as well as their communities. Owino says they will introduce new crops to farmers that are healthier than traditional crops.
Yeah, farmers in this area, Ju River area, they only cultivate annual crops like sorghum, like groundnuts, and they harvest everything they keep, then the livestock start roaming. But during the dry season, farmers face a lot of challenges in fact getting food. And we felt that with cassava, immediately the rain starts, the leaves will start sprouting. And also 1 or 2 months after the start of the rains, the tubers recover.
The food security production is expected to target around 5,000 farmers in Ju River, Raja and Wau counties. Commissioner of Ju River County, John Ropapai, who attended the official launching of the project at Achongchong Boma, urged communities to change some of the more traditional ways of cultivation and learn new skills to boost their livelihood.
Our culture is very good, but there is some element within that culture we have to improve on it. The habit we have, the way we are farming, it is too traditional way of farming. We must improve on that. If we insist, we continue the way we are doing our farming, even if this project implemented, when the project finished, then also it will go with all this.
Security can still be a problem in some counties of Wau. Arop says the government is responsible to provide security for the citizens in the area so they are free to cultivate more crops. Farmers in this project are expected to cultivate new crops like cassava and corn, besides the more traditional vegetables such as okra and pumpkins. Arop says it is important for communities to not depend solely on cattle for their livelihoods.
It is very important to us to have diversity of the produce. You may have sorghum, you may have crops like vegetable, and also we have cassava cutting, and we have some little of cows, some little of goat. So you are now becoming very powerful men.
Owino says if farmers cultivate more crops in the coming rainy season, their harvest will supply the local markets and they will gain enough of an income to start other business activities. But he warns farmers against getting into businesses that are not environmentally friendly.
They are also getting into other livelihood activities such as charcoal burning and tree cutting, which are harmful to the environment. So we also want them to take farming seriously and also integrate with the market. They can sell the produce in the market, and that will generate the commitment.
Arop says if farmers have bigger harvests, they will starve off hunger, not only for their communities, but for adjoining communities. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, an anti-polio campaign ends in Warabi State. That story is next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you handle a friend that does not respect time?
Such a person, what I can do is, I can tell him, please, the importance of time is what I can do to him. Please, you try to respect the time, because the time is important in your life. You can do things in respect with the time. So I can keep advise the person.
If someone doesn't respect it, it's like he doesn't respect you. I just live with him or her as he or she is, but I can't make much things or some projects with a person like that one.
I advise him to plan well and follow his time and probably make a timetable and see how best he can try to handle his time properly.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Two opposition leaders in Sudan were arrested over the weekend after signing a peace deal with rebel groups. They returned to Khartoum from Addis Ababa on Saturday and were arrested later that day. As VOA fellow Nabil Biagio reports, Khartoum calls the move betrayal and says the two leaders are subject to interrogation and could face charges of conspiracy against the state.
Sudan Call is a two-page document signed on Wednesday by the leader of the National Ummah Party, Sadiq al-Mahdi, the head of National Consensus Forces, Farouk Abu Issa, the head of Sudan Civil Society Alliance, Amin Makki Madani, and the rebel coalition of the Sudan Revolutionary Front. All signatories have vowed to end the war in Darfur, southern Kordofan and Blue Nile State, change the current regime in Khartoum, and achieve a comprehensive peace and democratic transition in Sudan. Madani and Abu Issa were arrested on Saturday upon their return to Khartoum from Addis Ababa. Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister.
We are not against to make allies to come to negotiations or to come to dialogue. This is actually requested, but to make allies with the rebels who are holding arms, and then you say clearly that you are going to trouble the regime. Which country can permit such act?
Abu Issa refused to participate in the national dialogue that President Omar al-Bashir called for earlier this year unless the rebel groups would be included in the talks. Last week also saw the suspension of the peace talks on Darfur between the government and the rebels when the government delegation refused to discuss issues of governance and regime change in Sudan. The head of the government delegation said they were only mandated by Khartoum to negotiate a cessation of hostilities agreement for Darfur, southern Kordofan and Blue Nile State. Bilal insists that was what the two parties agreed upon.
This round is only about the ceasefire and stopping hostilities, and about the problems concerning Darfur or the other two places. And they have to restrict themselves to this. About the problems of Sudan and the issues of laws and constitution and the problems and these things, this is Addis Ababa is not the place, but the round table for dialogue is the place.
Sudanese analyst Haj Hamad says the coming together of political and armed opposition groups in Sudan is a step in the right direction. He says the Sudanese opposition forces have long been divided.
One of the very major problems, historically speaking,
was the fact that the opposition was not together. So they allowed a kind of what you can call a move for a piece-by-piece solution.
Hamad says the government in Sudan had hoped to continue manipulating opposition forces by keeping them divided, but it now feels threatened by their call to work together.
They took the initiative of dialogue and they went fast and strong to amend their own fences, which undermines the government dialogue process.
Hamad says the fact that the opposition groups in Sudan are coming together to bring change in Sudan will unfortunately make the government resort to its usual tactics, arresting or threatening opposition leaders and renewing its military campaigns in the war-torn areas of Darfur, southern Kordofan, and Blue Nile State.
The dialogue, which was opened by the government and taken more serious by the opposition, ended up deepening the national crisis.
Recent talks in Addis Ababa to end the fighting in Darfur, Blue Nile and southern Kordofan between the government and rebel groups have achieved very little progress. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
In Warabi State, health officials completed this year, fourth and final round of the national polio immunization campaign, with the goal of immunizing more than 500,000 children. As Santino Monut Ayuel reports from the capital, Kwadjog, the campaign highlights big challenges facing countries like South Sudan, with poor roads and flooding, and the ongoing conflict often prevent access to health care services.
I'm Elizabeth Amanovio. I work for County Health Department, has M&E Ops.
22-year-old Elizabeth Aman is the monitoring and evaluation officer for Gogreal West County. As we travel on Tuesday to Alek Payam, some 50 kilometers north of Kwadjog, the journey water, fast and eventful. But about 10 kilometers into the trip, the road was impassable due to flood waters. Despite the danger, Amon was determined to reach the destination so that the team could vaccinate scores of children living in remote areas of Gogreal West County.
The flood is very high. We must try our best to reach those areas which are very far and are not accessible so that we serve the community and the children.
Despite the danger, Amon's team plows through the flood waters. Along on the journey to Alek Payam was Donato Kuik, the Gogreal West County Expanded Program Immunization Supervisor. He says despite their first efforts, there are simply not enough teams of vaccinators to do the job. Kuik says he wished vaccines could have been pre-positioned in all Payams of the county.
We were expecting the cold chain system in all the places, but now it is not all the payams that have cold chain.
What Kush means is that vaccines cannot be placed throughout Warabi State because the system of refrigeration necessary for storing vaccines, called the cold chain, is not well established. After the team struck a pull out of water dish, they continue on their journey to deliver vaccines for children in rural parts of Warabi State. Back in Kwadjog is Dr. Osijing Gachangula, a World Health Organization consultant in Warabi. According to Gachangula, locations which did not receive vaccines due to logistical problems during this latest campaign will be marked as gray areas. They will be given a special consideration during the next national campaign. He says campaigns like this one in Warabi will continue until polio is eradicated in new nation. Gachangula called on vaccinators to try every way they can to reach all children under the age of 5. And he advised mothers and caregivers to allow their children to be vaccinated.
Mothers should accept the vaccine no matter how many doses they had. The children below 5 years should be vaccinated, and it's expected that every child before he gets to the age of 5 years should be at least vaccinated 10 to 15 times.
Ngwar Ayom is Warabi State API manager. He worries that the time frame set by the National Ministry of Health is not enough for an effective polio vaccination campaign. He said that because Waraba State population increased significantly due to more internally displaced persons during the crisis.
Should some area miss, should some children not vaccinated, those who are missed, they will also be mobilized the wild virus of polio. So that is our fear.
On a positive note, Ngor believes officials have been able to raise awareness about the polio campaign throughout Waraba State.
The awareness is well because we are always talking radio, we are sending the banners, the posters, we have sexual mobilizers. I think the community are with us.
Total eradication declared when a country goes for 5 consecutive years without single polio case. 2 polio cases were reported in Yunta State earlier this year. Polio vaccination campaigns began in Southern Sudan in 1998. They are conducted quarterly each year and target all children under the age of 5. The campaigns are carried out by the Ministry of Health in collaboration with the World Health Organization and UNICEF. For BOA News, I'm Santino Manut in Kwajok.
Next week will mark a year since South Sudan plunged into conflict. In the run-up to the one-year anniversary of the start of the fighting, South Sudan in Focus will air a series of stories on how the unrest has affected almost every aspect of people's lives, from the amount of money they earn to their right to freely express themselves. We start with this report by Mungume Debs Rakarinj on the hidden and not-so-hidden impact of the year-long conflict on South Sudan's economy.
James Arich Garang is a senior economic analyst at the Juba Bay think tank, the Urban Center for Strategic Studies. He says the fighting displaced hundreds of thousands of members of the labor force across the country. This deprived the communities of their sources of livelihood.
Let's just take Malakal, for example, the town Malakal in Upper Nile State, where a number of teachers were displaced, and let's say they ran to Kakuma. These teachers are the breadwinners in their household. So in actual sense, this social impact on the household level. This household buy goods and services from the market. And so if their income tumble or if their income falls and become nothing, that has a greater impact on the overall economy.
He says the fighting also affected production of the country's main source of revenue, oil, thus hurting the national treasury. Professor Simon Monoja Lubang is the head of the College of Economics and Social Studies at the University of Juba. He says the backbone of South Sudan's economy, oil, has been hard hit by the fighting.
Those companies that are working on the oil production in Unity State have stopped work, or they have suspended their work. And obviously that has a lot of implication, which means there is no flow of oil to the international market, and therefore there is no income coming now to the oil companies or to even to the government now.
Oil accounts for 98% of the South Sudan's government revenues. Much of the fighting since December has been concentrated in the 2 oil-producing states, Unity and Upper Nile, and in Jonglei State, which is thought to also have oil revenues. Foreign oil companies pulled their workers out of Unity and Upper Nile states when the fighting began, and although they are reported to be trickling back, oil production has fallen nearly 30% from around 200,000 barrels a day to around 160,000. Professor Monoja says because of the fighting, some foreign investors have abandoned plans to set up shop in South Sudan. Arich Garang says the on-again-off-again ceasefire deals are not helping to boost investor confidence either. A cessation of hostilities agreement was signed in January and recommitted to at least 3 times, but it has never been respected.
These investors may be looking at this critical situation. If they have already made their mind 100% that they come to South Sudan, they would be coming. But if they were trying to see how the feedstock plays out, then these investors may not be coming, and that is a negative on the economy.
But one saving grace for South Sudan is the fact that some investors did not leave the country when the latest fighting started.
When the war broke out, they did not go. They remain here. And whatever thing made them to remain until today could be also a positive factor that would attract more investors to say, well, even if there's a conflict in South Sudan, the public is not out. The public does not burn its anger on the investors. The investors are always protected by the government and by the public.
Looking on the positive side, Arich Garang says South Sudan could turn the misfortune of the conflict into a benefit. He says investors could be attracted to South Sudan and particularly to Unity, Upper Nile and Jonglei State, which all need to be rebuilt after being at the epicenter of months of fighting. But Monoja says the fighting has tarnished South Sudan's image and that might destroy any chances of attracting new investors. Still, he says, all is not lost.
If there is peace and stability, then that can be able to attract investors into the country. Stability. Now, these two things must go together. The peace and then also sustainable peace and then stability. But if you have still some conflict here and there, I think the situation would not be conducive enough to attract investors.
Fighting erupted in Juba on December 15th last year and quickly spread to other parts of the country. Just days before the violence began, hundreds of foreign companies attended an investment conference in Juba that the government saw as a first step towards breaking South Sudan's dependency on oil. 50 of those companies registered with the government to do business in South Sudan, but that was before the crisis hit. It's unclear if any of the companies at last year's conference have set up shop in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Gumedev Surakarinj.
South Sudan in Focus will be running a series of stories to mark the one-year anniversary of the conflict that erupted in South Sudan.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with a song, Kuluyom Dushuman by Emmanuel Kembe. We have been listening to Kuluyom Dushuman by Emmanuel Kembe. I'm Michael Atit in Washington.
And I'm John Tanza, also in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.